Welcome to the Digital Story Show, new tools for the creative mind. The Digital Story Show takes you inside with tips for the creative pursuit of photography, music, video, hardware, software, techniques, and hacks. You'll soon find yourself thinking less about buttons and menus and more about expressing the artist inside us all. Now the Digital Story Show with Derek Story.
September 12th, 2006, the Digital Story Show with Derek Story. Today's topic, great group shots. You know, it's something that we all have to take sooner or later, and usually more often than not. You get a group of people together, you get a camera, and people want to do group shots. Now, there are a few tricks to taking good group shots, and I'm going to talk about those today because, you know, if you have to do this, you might as well have it turn out well, right? You know, no need to go through all the agony of taking a group shot only to have it look miserable and then have to apologize for it or something like that. I hate that. I just hate it. So if you're going to do the group shot, get a good one. And this is what we're going to talk about today. I think group shots really come down to two basic things: lighting and composition. I'm going to talk about lighting first because in a lot of ways it's the most important of the two, although composition sure has a big role once you get your lighting solved. But I think lighting is always a good place to start with photography because, you know, without the right light, you know, everything else is sort of an uphill battle. Now, for large group shots, or, you know, for group shots that are more than just a couple or two or three people, I think that it's really good to use natural lighting whenever possible, only because that even illumination is so much easier to work with than trying to use flashes or one or two flashes to illuminate a group of people. Now, sometimes you have no choice and you absolutely have to use a flash. Okay, we'll talk about that. But if you have the option of using natural lighting, I would go for it. A perfect example is, let's say that you're at a wedding and, you know, you have the option of, okay, let's do the family shots at the altar right after the ceremony, or let's go outside right after the ceremony and do the family shots. If I had anything to work with at all outside, that's where I would go, as opposed to trying to light the shots indoors. Now, a lot of times I do have to light the shots indoors, and okay, fine, you go from there. But I'm talking about if you have a choice, natural lighting is really a nice way to go. My favorite type of natural lighting are at the edges of the day. In event photography, you don't always have this option, but if you're planning your group shot ahead of time, and you do have some say in the timing of it, in the morning or in the late afternoon, really terrific. I like the mornings a lot, and especially if there's a little bit of overcast or if there's a little fog that hasn't burned off yet. I'm in Northern California, so we see probably a lot more of that here than in other places. But nonetheless, morning light, regardless if you have any overcast or not, is a lot sweeter. It's a lot more diffused because it's going through more atmosphere, it's lower, or because of any type of cloud cover. So if you, again, afternoon light, very similar. You know, again, it's going through more atmosphere. The light's a lot sweeter. Either way, you're going to get nicer shots, and you actually have a good chance of just using natural light only under these lighting conditions. Now, if it's midday or if the lighting's very harsh, then I still think working outdoors is easier than working indoors because you have more ambient light. But what I like to do in those cases, then, when the lighting is harsh and I can't just go off natural light for my group shot, and I should say what I mean by harsh is when the light's very direct, when the sun's high overhead, what it does is it creates shadows, you know, that are, I think, unflattering. And so you'll have One area where the sun is shining will be very hot, and then the other area will be very dark shadow. And it sort of accentuates people's features, their noses, if their eyes are moved back in the sockets a little bit. It accentuates all the stuff that we really don't like in our portraits. Okay, what we like in our portraits is, we like to have our features nice and kind of smooth and nothing, we don't like our noses to look really big. We don't like our eyes to look very, super set back. We don't like to see all the imperfections in our skin. We like things just to be kind of smoothed out a little bit. And that's where that diffuse lighting is so nice. So when I say that it's contrasty out and you have harsh light and you want to avoid it, that's what I'm talking about. Now, under those conditions, what I like to do is I like to move the people under a tree or under some patio covering, whatever's available, where I have what we call open shade. Now, open shade's really nice because it gets people out of the harsh sunlight. You usually still have a nice lit backdrop, background to work with. You still have lots of ambient light coming in, into the open shade. And it may not be exactly what you want, but it's a really good starting point. Once I have everyone sort of gathered in my open shade, then what I do is I mount the camera flash and I use a fill light to put a little sparkle in their eyes and to give that nice front lighting. Remember now, front lighting for portraits is good. I've talked about this before because it softens features. It doesn't accentuate things such as noses and skin imperfections. It flattens them out. And remember that lighting from the side accentuates texture. So that's usually not a good thing in portraits. So a fill light that you have on top of your camera or on a bracket, however you do it, is coming from the front. And so that gives that nice frontal light. So a very good group shot technique, especially for groups, is to gather people in the open shade. Make sure you have a nice backdrop. Their eyes will be, nice and open. Their faces will be relaxed because they're not out having the sun shining right in their eyes. They're not uncomfortable. They'll be much more comfortable in this situation in the open shade. And then you just add a little bit of fill light with your flash. It really works well. It's a great technique for getting group shots in outdoor conditions. Now, remember, you have to be aware of the effective distance of your flash. So if your flash is good for 8 feet, don't stand 12 feet away. And if your flash is good for 15 feet, don't stand 20 feet away. Make sure that you're working with the effective range of your flash. And for larger group shots, I usually like to be in even a little bit more. And then also, you have to be aware of the angle of coverage that your flash has. So if you're using a wide-angle lens to get everyone in the shot into the frame, make sure that your flash can cover that same angle. Okay, so these are just a few things, and you want to check these out beforehand before you go out into the field, so that when you go out there, you're confident in your equipment choices and you'll know that things will work. Now, for straight group shots, and what I mean by that, ones that aren't fun where, people are being a little kooky, but, for just your nice straight group shot, and if you're using a wide-angle lens, keep an eye on the edges of the frame so that you're not getting too much distortion. How that usually happens is if the camera is angled, way up or way down with a wide-angle lens up close, on the edges you can get some distortion. Now, for fun shots, that could be okay, but for, your serious group shot, people might not like that. The way that you counteract that distortion is to make sure that the camera plane, the plane of the camera, is parallel to the plane of your subjects. So, and when you do that, you can use a wide-angle lens, and you won't, unless the lens itself has a lot of distortion, you won't get a lot of distortion. So the camera parallel to your subjects square it up, so to speak, and you'll eliminate or at least really cut down on distortions on the edges of the frame. Now, if you do have to light a fairly large group shot, and what I mean by that is like 10 people or more indoors, then you might want to start thinking about having a second flash, because that first flash might not cover it, it might not give you enough oomph that you want for a well-lit group shot. Now, with my Canon flashes, I actually have the ability to have a slave flash. You know, I use the current model Canon flashes, so I can set the flash that's on my camera as a master, so it will both flash, but it will also trigger other Canon flashes that I have positioned around. And I can set up another flash or even two other flashes to go off at the same time. Then what happens is Canon's bodies, they will measure all this light and take all this into account from all the flashes and then give you a nice exposure. It works really well. So for larger group shots, a lot of times what I'll do is I'll have an assistant or a helper or someone stand off to a 45-degree angle of me, hold the flash up high, and point it more or less at the center of the frame, of the composition. And so I'll have one light coming in from the side, and then I'll have my flash coming in straight on. Again, you like that flash up high. You don't want it down too low, because if you have it down low, it will either cast shadows on the wall behind the subjects, if there's a wall within distance, or, you know, it can cast shadows on other people's faces in the shot, which I really hate that, because a lot of times if that happens, I won't see it in the LCD viewfinder of the camera, and I won't see it till I'm back looking at the shots on my computer at home and then go, oh, no, I can't believe that happened. And that happens when the flash isn't high enough. So you want to get that flash up high. You want to get tall assistants if you can, or even have them stand on a chair or something so that those flashes are up above, so they're not casting shadows, you know, directly on the faces that are to each side of the subject. And this is a very important point. And there's a big difference between two flashes and one flash on these group shots. And I really think that if you're going to be doing this kind of photography a lot, that you want to consider having, two or three flashes that you can trigger wirelessly, and then having, you know, people around to hold them for you. You can put them on light stands, but my experience is that you don't really have the time to do that like you would like. You know, people want you to work really quickly, whether it's a wedding or any kind of event, or even just a regular group shot with family. People don't like you to, you know, to fool around with light stands and all that sort of stuff. They just think, you know, you should be able to take the shot and be done with it, and so that they can move on to the next thing. That's usually the expectation. So a lot of times, light stands just don't work that well because you don't have time to do them. Now, if this is an advertising shot or something, you know, where you get to really fool around with it and get it the way you want and get it perfect, then, you know, that's another thing. And in those cases, you can use light stands. But for event photography group shots, I don't think you're going to have the luxury of light stands most of the time. While we're on the subject, I want to mention a little bit about depth of field for larger group shots, because a lot of times what I'll do is I'll have two rows, maybe even sometimes three rows of people. And so there is a little depth to the shot. And again, you know, I'm always looking for steps or a little slope or a little something where I can stagger people, and so that they're not all standing flat on the ground, you know, where I can get some people up and some and have some people lower and higher and so forth. But if you do have multiple rows, then you do have some depth of field. And so if you're shooting in program mode under these lighting conditions indoors, a lot of times what your camera will do will actually set the aperture to the widest aperture. For instance, if you have an f3.5 lens, you know, that's its maximum aperture, in program mode inside, when you're doing flash shots, a lot of times that's what the camera will set it at. And that doesn't give you very much depth of field. So you can actually, and especially if you happen to focus on someone that's in the back row, the folks in the front can be soft. Yeah, and that's a real bummer. And again, you won't notice that in the LCD viewfinder. You won't notice it until you have the shots on your computer after everything is all done, after everyone has gone home and you can't do the group shot again. And then you're sitting there looking at it and going, oh, I can't believe it. You know, it is just the worst feeling when you have that softness because of lack of depth of field. So what I recommend for group shots is to use either aperture priority and set it, I like F5.6 because that gives me a little operating room, gives me a little bit of depth of field. Or you can set it in manual mode too. So then you would set your aperture at F5.6 and shutter speed around a 30th of a second. And that way you can catch a little bit of ambient light too. And that's real nice. And then I would focus on in the person, usually more near the center of the shot and in the front. Or if it's a shot with, let's say, three rows, maybe even someone in the middle row, just be careful that that front row doesn't go soft. Maybe I would try a few of each. I think the front row, unless there's a whole lot of depth to the shot, is usually pretty safe because, you know, the depth of field, you usually have more depth of field behind the point of focus than you do in front of it. So front row should be pretty safe. And especially if you give yourself a little operating room at F5.6 or F8, if you can get away with it, if you got enough light to get with F8, a lot of times you won't. You know, and you can cut yourself a little bit of slack by maybe upping your ISO to 400 if you have a camera that captures a good 400 and doesn't give you much noise at that ISO, then that'll buy you a little bit of f-stop too. Either way, it's really something just to keep in mind. Try not to shoot your group shots at a wide open aperture, and especially if you have more than one row of people. Okay, so now I want to move over to composition for just a few minutes. The first thing, people will always stand too far apart if you let them. And, you know, especially in America. Now, in some of the European countries, they're not as bad at this as Americans are, but Americans really like to have what we call their personal space. So they like a little bit of space between them and the next person. And it could be all this time that we spend driving in cars, or I don't know where the heck that came from, but it's definitely something that I've noticed different when shooting in the States than when I shoot in Europe. So you want to, but you know, anywhere in the world, people can stand too far apart. So no matter where you're shooting your group shots, you got to keep this in mind. So one thing that I'm always doing right away is pushing people together and reminding them that the camera accentuates distances between people. And I think it really kind of messes up the shot, especially on the formal group shots. You really notice it. So get people together. A lot of times you will have to vary the angles of people's shoulders. So you can have some people standing more straight on if they look okay that way. And then you can have other folks angled at 45-degree angle. And when they're angled at 45-degree angle and then looking toward the camera, that allows you to get them even closer to folks. So get them nice and close. Try to keep your shot from being too spread out, you know, too horizontal, too wide. And look out for distances between people. Now, when you squish them together, especially when you have multiple rows, then there's the other issues, making sure that everybody's face is visible. And so I usually try to stagger folks so that people in the back row are looking in between the opening from the people in the front row. And I will say to everyone, you know, can you see the camera? Do you have a clear view of the camera? Because if you can't see the camera can't see you. And this is something to really, you know, make sure that you mentally go through this and that you look and make sure that you have a clear view of everyone in the group shot. so that you know, later on when you're looking at the image on your computer, you don't have someone's head hidden, and then again that sinking feeling that we all hate at 10 o'clock at night after the day of shooting, when you can't go back and shoot it again. So make sure everybody can see the camera. Now, the other thing too is check everyone's, just visually kind of check hair and clothing and stuff. Make sure that, you know, you don't have any wacky hair things happening. Buttons unbuttoned that shouldn't be unbuttoned. Zippers unbuttoned that shouldn't be unzipped. Zippers unbuttoned. What the heck am I talking about there? Zippers unzipped that shouldn't be unzipped, which is just about every zipper. And just kind of keep an eye. Look out for necklaces, you know, especially if they have a pendant on it that is crooked. It will really aggravate you when you look at the shot later on. So just sort of do that kind of mental wardrobe check, and then you can start to shoot the shot. Now, one thing that I like to do once I've taken the straight group shot, you know, the one that you sort of have to have, is see if people have a little bit more time to do something fun. And depending on how much time people have, it can, you know, sort of depends on how much fun you can have. But I at least like to get people, you know, leaning against each other. This is one of my favorite things, where you have the people on the right kind of lean into the people on the left, and you say, come on, put your shoulders into it, you know. And then what will happen is that they'll start to laugh, and, you know, things will start to happen. You'll get some energy going. So that's one technique to try. Another technique is to, for instance, if you're using steps, if you have church steps or whatever you're using, and you have the group on the steps, and then you're standing on the ground, you can change that around. So you can put them on the ground, you can get up on the steps, and you can have them strike wacky poses, and then you can shoot down on them, and that's kind of fun. There's all sorts of things you can do. You can have them pick up somebody in the group, you know. But main thing, try to get them, you know, connecting with each other. Try to get something sort of fun going. And a lot of times, these will be the shots that they end up liking the best. And, you know, you can just let it go. You know, you can just have fun with it, because you already know that you have the straight group shot in the can. So anything that happens here is a bonus. And a lot of times it ends up being the really cool thing that happens. So I encourage you to try the wacky shots after you do the regular group shot. It's a real bonus, and sometimes it turns out producing, you know, the winner of the shooting session. One thing that happens to me fairly regularly is that after I work through the group shots, there'll be some couples or small groups of people say, hey, can you do just us, just the two of us, just the three of us, things like that. And if I have time, I will do them, because, you know, it is nice. You know, you do have folks there. You usually have figured out the lighting by now. Hopefully you have a nice setting. And so this sort of stuff isn't that big of a drag. And if you're selling your prints, it can really, you know, bump up sales quite a bit. So, but what I like to do, and especially if I'm shooting outdoors, which, as you know, I'm trying to do if I can, is I'll switch lenses, and I will go to a long lens. I like to go to, 100 to 300 millimeter lens, or something that really is nice and long, and have the backdrop be as far back as possible. And then, you know, in combination with the long lens, just really totally drop it out. Just totally, you know, just go for that really nice, soft background look on the couple shots. And then, you know, get them very nice and close. Get them in open shade or somewhere that's pretty lighting-wise. If you can get some backlighting on their hair or side lighting on their hair and then use fill flash, that looks really good. Although with a long lens, I'm usually looking for natural lighting first. A lot of times, one of the things that works really well in these settings, if you have an assistant, use a light disc or any sort of reflector that you might have, and just go with all natural lighting, forget the flash, and have your assistant bounce some light from the disc up into the face of the models, your subjects, and that looks really good. That's a very pleasing natural light portrait. You have your nice long lens, you have a soft background, The lens also sort of flattened, the long lens also will kind of flatten the features of folks, which is usually very flattering. And it's really a great way to go. And you can, as I said, if you're selling these images, you can really drive up sales. So if people want to do breakout shots and you have time to do it, and be prepared, have your long lens, have a reflector available. Even if you don't have an assistant, you can probably get someone else from the group shot to hold it for you, and go for it. And a lot of times you'll get really good stuff. So I mentioned the selling prints thing, and this is something that I think is pretty cool. And I use Shutterfly and Shutterfly's Pro service, but there are other things such as SmugMug. There's a number of services out there that work pretty well. But essentially, it goes like this: you know, you upload your pictures, you have an account with them. You set the price for how much each of the individual shots will sell for in the different sizes, 4x6, 5x7, so forth. The printer obviously is charging a certain price for their services. You set your price, and then you give people the URL where this album is, and they can go there, and they can just buy directly from the printing service. They buy at whatever prices you set, and then make the difference in the cost between how much it really costs to make the print and how much you're charging. And it's all handled directly by the printing service, so you don't have to get involved. And especially on group shots and stuff where you're going to have a lot of breakout shots, and you're going to have a lot of people ordering prints, I don't think you really need to spend your time handling that. You can if you want. I'd rather be out taking pictures than doing all that kind of administrative stuff. But you might want to take a look at these services that will handle the sales for you. They'll accept the credit cards. They'll keep track of everything. You have record keeping, the whole deal. And then that way you can just give people that URL, have them go to their personal album that you've created, let them buy whatever they want. The printer takes care of it, and you don't have to worry about it. But yet, you still make some money on the deal. And these services are quite good. And again, I said I use Shutterfly Pro, but SmugMug and some of the other services also do a very good job of this. It's something to keep in mind, something to look into. Okay, let's do just a little bit of Virtual Camera Club housekeeping here. First thing, I'm already getting submissions for the September photo assignment, which is Circle, and they're already really good, and I'm already very happy. So I hope this is a good sign, and that again that we're going to have a great turnout for September. And I'd love to run an album like we did for Red, which was last month's photo assignment. I'd love to run something at least that big and that good for September. It looks like we're off to a good start. So the assignment for September is Circle, and I'm just going to leave that up to you. Get your shot in by the end of the month, by the end of September. If you have any questions about submitting, go to the submissions page. There's one thing. Oh, I have to change on that page. I'm going to accept sizes up to 600 pixels wide. It's still 400 pixels on the height. So if you have a vertical shot, still 400 pixels tall, which is what it says on the submission page now. But on the submission page now, I just now remembered that I need to go change that. It says 400 pixels wide, and because of this new gallery format that I've gone to, I should do 600 pixels wide for the horizontal shot. So if you want to send something that's 600 pixels wide on a horizontal shot, go for it. And either way, 400 or 600 is great. But if you want to send in 600, fabulous. I'll accept it. So Circle for September, work on your shot, get it turned in, and let's make another great gallery. Grab shots continuing to roll as always. Having lots of fun with the grab shots. And as they come to you, send them in so I can have them in the queue. Usually when you send them in, I won't write you back right away. but I do catalog it. And then when I get ready to publish it, or right after I've published it, I'll drop you a note and let you know that it's online. And it's just a ton of fun. And I should mention my favorite lens. I actually haven't been getting submissions for that lately. And that's the thing, that if you have a lens that you just think is the cat's meow and you want to write it up and talk about it and share it with other people in a virtual camera club, then take a look at the My Favorite Lens section on the submissions page on the Digital Story site, and send one in, and you know, maybe we can get that going again. I haven't seen a lot of activity there lately, and you know, maybe maybe we love all of our lenses and we just don't want to pick one out right now because the other ones will get jealous. That's probably it. I'm pretty sure now that I think about it. And I want to thank Boink Software, the makers of Photo Magico, for their continued support of the Digital Story. They're going to support the site for sure through the rest of the year, which is just fabulous. It's a great help to me as I try to run this virtual camera club. And take a look at the Photo Magico tile on the homepage if you haven't already. And you know, just show them a little love. You know, go over there, take a look, and see what they have to offer. Okay, I think that is going to do it for today. I hope I've inspired you on this whole group shot thing, or at least armed you so the next time you face it, you're ready to get that great group shot. Pay attention to the lighting. Try to get a good composition. Get people close together. Have a little fun. Be lighthearted. Don't be too serious while you're shooting these things. Be a little lighthearted. Have some fun. Get some energy going. And I think you'll like what you see. And go out and grab some shots. I'll see you next week. I'll be here. www.thedigitalstory.com. Make sure you check it daily. See what's going on. And I'll see you here next week. Bye-bye now.
Your questions and comments, email them to questions@thedigitalstory.com. For show notes, web blogs, and informative articles, visit www.thedigitalstory.com. We'll see you next time on The Digital Story.